Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the India Independent Films Podcast, where we talk about films and film writing. I am Pankaj. I write on my blog Dichotomy of Irony and also contribute articles on the IIF website. I'm with me Rahul again, from critic for the Film Companion and writer for many other film publications. Today we have a set of another 3-4 topics where we'll cover. Before I go there, Rahul, firstly I want to ask, actually, you did not vote for the 5 best films. I was looking at your nominations. I couldn't find those.
Yeah, so I don't think, I think the Film Companion and the internal critics didn't officially vote for the thing, but I am, as it turns out, I am planning to do like a small video because I wasn't in office for the last like couple of weeks or so. I was supposed to go there and record, like a lot of the Film Companion critics are doing it on video and basically declaring their 5 favorite Indian films. So I'm supposed to do it today. So I was just looking up that, because lists are my least favorite part of like this job. You know, honestly, like I normally don't take any of these lists seriously because they change every year. So I'm very worried that if I sort of name 5 Indian films, and mostly I'll have recency bias, I'll be held to that for the rest of my life. So so let's see. I'll probably be putting them out like today or tomorrow.
Okay, so I won't ask then. I think we'll wait. Yeah. I actually, the context for those who don't know, Film Companion actually came out with a list of best Indian films forever. And they asked like 150 or I don't know how many, some cinephiles to basically vote from all walks of life, from all industries. So it's on the Film Companion website. I just couldn't find Rahul's specifically, the website, like his top 5 films. But as he explained that he'll be talking about it separately today in a video. So those who are interested, they can go and look at that website. Okay, otherwise, how have the last few weeks been, and anything interesting that you would like to share?
Last few weeks have been, I think, like business as usual. You know, good, bad, ugly, everything. I mean, the Made in Heaven 2, I think, I'm not sure we talked about that, but yeah, like that was a big talking point online for a lot of people for various reasons, whether the controversy or whether people are liking or disliking the show. What struck me was that the discourse was very different from 4 years ago when the first season of Made in Heaven came. And that shows how much the streaming landscape has changed, because people are starting to sort of demand a little more, even from the stories that are progressive and saying the right things, which is not a bad thing. You know, like it's still, at least the ones that aren't trolls online. So I found that very interesting, the discourse more than the show. I'm not a big fan of the show, the second season at least. I mean, we had all the blockbusters coming out one after another, Gadar 2, which I absolutely hated. There was OMG 2, which did a lot of business, first Akshay Kumar hit in a long time. And yeah, I watched Dreamgirl 2 last week, and none of them, I mean, suffice to say, none of them really were worth talking about a lot. I remember doing a podcast a couple of days ago on Gadar 2 and Dreamgirl 2, and we were really struggling to talk about the film. So we had to talk about the larger context of, you know, the films and how it's being received and why it's such a big hit, because, you know, honestly, they barely qualify as sort of cinema in a sense, given the atmosphere right now. So on that front, I think Guns and Gulabs was probably the most entertaining thing I watched in the last couple of weeks. I'd not say it was Rajan DK's best show. It's probably their, you know, least solid show, but I think it was still very enjoyable to watch, like at least parts of it. It was a little too long, a little too meandering, but the characters were like a hoot, and I will gladly watch anything they make.
Was it, I think we spoke about Gaura before. Was it a month? It's been a month, right? Gaura.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You called the writers, right? How was that experience?
Yeah, it was interesting because I normally don't talk to filmmakers or creators or writers or, you know, interview them or whatever it is. But I was particularly curious about Gaura because of the way it's designed and written. And I and I managed to, like, obviously make contact with the writers. It's easy. It's more accessible now, you know, like, it's not like Stars where you have to go through 100 people. So it was very nice that, you know, they sort of knew me, I knew them, and we could basically just talk about it like it's proper work. So yeah, I enjoyed talking to them. I had a lot of questions. Unfortunately, there were sound issues on the podcast, but you know, that's what you get when you have three writers trying to figure out sort of technology to do a podcast. I learned a lot while asking them questions about the way they sort of conceived Kora, because very intricate and complex series. And the most important thing I took away from that podcast was the fact that whatever we as film critics and viewers tend to sort of find subtext in a show, or if we like see a particular design of a show that, you know, this is what the filmmakers might have been trying to do. I think what I found out from them is that they write in service of the characters and the story. So the patterns and the subtext subconsciously come out. If you stay honest to your surroundings and to the setting you want to tell a story in, I think all those, they don't do it deliberately. They don't do it trying to show off, saying, look, you remember this particular sort of thread. This was actually, supposed to give a clue about who was the killer in the end. And they were also very clear that they didn't want it to be a whodunit per se. So for me, it was very interesting to know that they hadn't planned all the cleverness that we found in the show. It just happened organically. And I find that very interesting about the writing process, especially when it's long-form shows. And for me, that was a great takeaway, because if you actually try to plan these things, it shows. Like in Made in Heaven 2, you know, it shows that you're trying too hard to tell, to sort of give a message and to give commentary as well as tell a story. And you're basically reverse packaging your story to give the message. You're, you know, it's just in service of the story and the environment, and when the commentary comes out, it'll be incidental. And I think good writing is about that.
I actually also, I'm very slow, but I also finished Kora. And one thing that struck me was the whosoever has done the casting of the show. It's so so interesting. You've never seen those people before, and they completely gel into that milieu of that environment. That I remember this nurse who is a little funny, and then she was saying that I'm going for a lunch, and that is somebody who would exactly be in that place. So I was just wondering who's done this casting. It's actually a very good show. I liked it more than Patal Log, actually.
Even I'd say the same. Like, I think Kora really grew on.
Yeah, I felt like Patal Log was a little, I mean, of course it was three, four years ago. It was a little in your face, as you said, right? Like the subtext was very visible there. But I felt like Kora was very beautifully done, and nobody was perfect in this show. Yeah. Everybody was flawed, but at the same time, there is this humanity in them somehow that came up, like how that police officer's wife eventually allowed him to, you know, like very complex characters, but very beautifully shown. I really like that, Kora. Okay, now let's come to our topic. First, let's talk about Ratna Pathak Shah and Nasiruddin Shah. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that was, I think, your review on that short film that he did. Firstly, like, how was that short film? I'm talking about, I think, Nasiruddin Shah's film, Good.
Man Woman.
Yeah. It's available on YouTube for those who are interested.
Yeah, it's. I think it's playing on the Large Short Films channel. I was actually waiting for that short because it was supposed to be Nasiruddin Shah's short film directorial debut. And I know, you know, a lot of people make short films. It's not such a big deal that they are, because he's made a feature film earlier. You know, he directs a lot of plays, a lot of stage. And I've seen a couple of his plays, and I'm a big fan of how both of them are on stage. You know, husband and wife tend to direct each other a lot of the times, and I've seen a couple of their stage productions. So I was very curious to see how that translates onto the screen. Man Woman is the short film. It was, as I expected, really simple filmmaking, like very much like a stage play, not really overreaching in that sense, in a narrative sense. Of course, it could have been more sophisticated. The filmmaking itself wasn't great. It was pretty simplistic. But I still kind of liked it because it comes from a space of sort of understanding the dynamics of sort of intergenerational relationships and love. And, you know, he managed to tell it in a really smooth and very crowd-pleasing manner. And it's not an easy thing to do. Of course, it had Ratna Pathak Shah, it had his son Vivan also in the film. There's Sabha Azad. I think fine actors, and I don't think it was trying to make a very deep message. And for what it was, I quite liked it. You know, I liked the title very much. I wrote about it in the review. You know, nothing to write home about in terms of the craft, but you know, I'll take it because it stayed with me. Because you could see a sense of, you could see some wisdom sort of emanating through the film. You could see Nasiruddin Shah having lived a certain kind of life and having observed the generations under him and trying to make a statement about it. And I found it quite sweet, like in a way that you'd watch a Rajkumar Hirani film like 15 years ago and say, okay, this thread of that film, whether maybe the old age home was a sweet part. So I felt like this short film was in that vein.
Got it. Have you seen his other directorial, which is Yun Hota To Kya Hota? I think that came in 2008. Do you remember that film at all?
I remember that. I haven't watched it once. Again, yeah. I watched it because I found out it was directed by him. I quite liked it, you know, back then. I haven't watched it again, so I have no idea how it's aged. It was fairly entertaining, and you could see it's sort of a culmination of his career as an actor as well. There was a lot of his learnings as an artist in that sense. It wasn't a perfect film. It was pretty flawed. And eventually, you know, not a lot of people name that film in their lists or anything. But I thought it was a very interesting film. And it only goes to show that, sure, not all great actors can be great filmmakers, but they can actually tell a story when they want to. And if they want to. And sure, the craft isn't perfect. It isn't sophisticated. But you will always have an interesting voice in that sense, because I still remember parts of that film.
Yeah, I think it was about 9/11 some of it. I remember the trailer. I think Vipasha is there, or Konkana, somebody is there. So let's talk about, you know, I'll come to Nasiruddin Shah, but Ratna Pathak Shah, you know, she seems to be, I was just looking at her filmography, she hasn't actually done a lot of films, but she seems to be around, like, somehow, like, we know her for ages, I think, because of her TV. She has done some TV as well. Have you seen Sarabhai vs. Sarabhai?
I used to watch a bit of it. I haven't seen it, you know, fully, like a lot of people have. But that was my first glimpse of Ratna Pathak Shah as well. Like, I didn't know it was her then. You know, it's not like her sister, who was in films in the 80s, who acted, who we saw in film for a long time, you know. I think Ratna Pathak started doing films much later. And it's surprising, as you said, and she has that ability to make you feel like she's been around for a long time. And I'm not just talking about the TV she's done. In general, she sort of plays the kind of characters that feel she's been acting like for 30 or 40 years, and like it's muscle memory. And I think most of her performances in the last 20 years, since she's been acting in, so to say, Hindi cinema or mainstream Hindi cinema, have all been very, very memorable in their own ways. You know, I don't think she's appeared in bad films, but I don't think she's ever given a subpar performance, because it comes very naturally to them. If you've seen her on stage, you'll realize that it's really an extension of who they are, and it's something they do inside out, day in and day out. And it comes to both of them, like you know, Nasir as well as Ratna Pathak Shah, to watch them in film doesn't feel like, it never also feels like they're treating film as a step down from theater, because all of them are purists and they've been doing it for so long. It's very easy to look at cinema as something you do, say, on the side for either money or recognition or something like that. But you could genuinely tell that even Ratna Pathak Shah is such a master of her craft, and she's so at ease on the screen that, you know, it's hard to tell that she's only been doing it for less than 2 decades.
Right. So, you know, in Kapoor and Sons, she's very good in Kapoor and Sons. Who would you say is, who was your best role in Kapoor and Sons?
Best role in Kapoor and Sons, that's a good question. I think for me, the best character in Kapoor and Sons, writing-wise, was... I think it was Rajat Kapoor's character, because, you know, he's the patriarch and he's sort of the flawed man in the house. And it's the sort of character we see in older Hindi films that tend to be villains. But you're humanizing him to an extent, and he's the reason for, say, a dysfunctional marriage. But, you know, I felt Ratna Pathak Shah's character was probably the most complex in that sense, because, you know, she's also a very flawed mother who favors one son over the other. She's also a wife who's tired of her husband's philandering ways. So she's torn between so many different kinds of worlds. And it's very, you can sense that it's very difficult being a woman in that environment, at least for someone like her. And she also has a father-in-law. And so yeah, for me, she was my favorite character and favorite performance in that film. And it was always going to be that way, because she is the best actor in that film. Even on paper, you know, even if you take Rishi Kapoor out and all, he's still very commercial in a sense. But Ratna Pathak Shah really owned that role. And it's something she's come to be known for. You know, she's never really the leading role in any of it. She's always playing the parents in a lot of these films, whether it's older women or middle-aged women grappling with desire or loneliness or even just being a mother, like Jaane Tu Ya Jaane Na, one of my favorite roles of hers. You know, she's just being a very wry mother of young people and someone who's an activist, but she doesn't make it into a stereotype. And I think she gets the humor in that film, and it can only come from, you know, doing a lot of writing and theater over the years. And, you know, I think that's, and she's, if you ask me about any of the films she's in and who my favorite character is, I think she would be the answer most of the time.
Mm. Right. And, you know, you just mentioned Ratna Pathak, and now if you talk about Gehraiya, which is Shakun Batra's other film, and here it's the Nasiruddin Shah, the father character again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So between his father roles, let's say Zindagi Na Milegi Dobara and Gehraiya, which one do you have a little bit more fondness for? Or any other father character.
I love the fact that, you know, he's very awarely sort of played this flawed, distant father role in a lot of his films.
Yeah.
Right from the beginning, you know, right from the 80s and 90s. You can see, like, he is fine with playing these kind of roles, because he might have at some point, you know, a lot of his real life might have inspired it. He might have sort of mined a lot of his own sort of family life over the years. I feel like there's no one better than him at playing that kind of father. But for me, and I think we pointed it out time and again, that, you know, it comes very naturally to him. That's not to say that, you know, he's pigeonholed, but it's just that filmmakers tend to imagine him while writing the script when they're thinking of a certain kind of either estranged or... slightly distant father, in Indian father, that is. For me, my favorite has been Gehraiya, because of the way it subverts our perception of his father's role, right? You know, because we always imagine him as this distant father, and in Gehraiya, the entire sort of, not twist, but the entire point of it was that he was not that father all along, and that the protagonist saw in a mother, she was not willing to see in a mother the kind of flaws and the kind of mistakes that she saw in her father. She judged him because, in a certain sense, the Deepika Padukone character was also judging a Nasiruddin Shah character and the kind of fathers he plays over the years. And I like that the casting is such that it led us down that path also, only to reveal him as the more human parent amongst the two, and the one who has been suffering, who's also the victim, not just the perpetrator. Because it's always that the father... fathers are the problem here, but his wife was in love with another man, we find out in the end, and he never told his daughter about it because he didn't want his daughter to. And I've known a lot of parents like that, you know, and you know, from experience, from we are very quick to judge the man in the family or the man in the house. So so for him to sort of use that perception and then gain our empathy towards the end of the film, in one of the most beautiful moments where he sits down with Deepika Padukone character and sort of tells her that he's been there all along, and she realizes this truth. For me, that was one of the most moving moments of that year. So I think that's my favorite sort of, because he's always in the peripheral character in the film until he comes out towards the end and proves that he's loved his daughter all along.
Right. We mentioned Jaane Tu Ya Jaane Na. Somehow it has a very strong following among the people who grew up post 2000, so we grew up sort of in 90s, and a lot of the young people who are in their 20s now, maybe they consider Jaane Tu Ya Jaane Na as one of the best rom-coms, a sort of, I'll not say cult following, but a lot of strong following there. Do you like Jaane Tu Ya Jaane Na? And how was that experience for you?
Even I was quite a big fan of it when it released. First of all, it came as a surprise to a lot of us. We didn't expect it to be so smart and witty and funny, and a lot of actors we thought wouldn't really pull it off did. Very well written film. I know Abbas Tirwala was a writer for a long time, but it's a rom-com is not easy to pull off, at least back then, also in 2008. And I remember watching the film twice in 2 days, in theaters. With different sets of friends, and I felt like it hit very close to home in terms of someone who studied in Bombay, who did college in Bombay, who has a group of friends from college, and I thought it was a very enjoyable film. I watched it again recently after a very long time. Some of it may not have aged as well, but for example, Jenny Lea's performance. But a lot of it is still very enjoyable. Paresh Rawal's character is one of my favorite sort of caricature Bombay cops, because he used to play a lot of Mumbai police characters back then. And I think he did a very nice parody of that in this film. And of course, the relationship between Ratha Patakcha and her dead husband and Nasir's photo on the wall. I think no Hindi film has done something like that, because normally it's always a sob story, right? A widow grieving the death of husband and then sort of cursing the son for turning out like the husband, being violent and being worried that he'll be like the husband and die like the husband. But here they turned it into such a nice joke and a nice, really visual motif they turned it into. And I thought Ratna Patak and Nasiruddin were absolutely delightful in that comic. Their comic timing was spot on. And just to turn that Rajput trope on its head, which would be difficult to do today because there'd be a lot of protests, was a very smart thing to do. And I think I wrote about one of those characters in my 50 memorable characters list. I think Ratna Patak and Nasir were part of that list, and this was exactly why I loved those that particular motif in the film. And I think that's all writing. That's all Abbas Tirwala.
Was Ratna Patak again the best performer in Lipstick Under a Burqa?
Oh yeah, by far. She was, first of all, most interesting character. I'm not a big fan of the filmmaker, Alankrita. She has, Lipstick was probably, arguably her best film. But, the film was in the news for many reasons. I think one of the better characters she is designed so far is the Ratna Patak Cha character in that film, and for all the obvious reasons, showing a middle-aged woman on screen, trying to figure out her desire, having phone sex, masturbating. It's very, now I feel like Alankrita does it for shock value, but earlier in that film, I felt like it looked a bit more organic, maybe because it was Ratna Patak Cha's performance as well and her commitment to the role, and she did it without really turning it into some loud feminism stereotype. I didn't like the way the film ended. I didn't like the other characters. But I did think that she was a fantastic, hers was a fantastic performance. She was also known, at one point she had almost forgotten her name. Her identity is such a crucial part of that film. that when someone asks her name, she hesitates and she forgets her own name, and because she's known as, she's known as, whatever.
Buaji or somebody.
Buaji or something. And that's how we tend to know these characters on screen. And that's how, in fact, we tend to know our grandparents or our parents also. If someone asks you what your grandparents' name are, you'll think for 5 minutes saying, oh shit, did they have names? So I think Ratha Pataksha got that in the performance, and she did a very good job of portraying that.
Do you remember Khoobsurat?
Oh yeah, of course. Khoobsurat. I think we also talked about this film some time back, and I remember Khoobsurat. I liked its, sort of very Disney premise, obviously, and I thought she did a very fun job of hamming it up, as the sort of almost like the very Hollywood character that you'd see someone like Emma Thompson play or a lot of this stoic Helen Mirren sort of character. I think she really harnessed her stage experience with comic timing to play that character, and she played a stereotype, and I felt like she was enjoying herself doing that also.
Yeah. Whenever I think I've read Nasiruddin Shah's somehow interviews, and he's always said that, he's a better actor than Amitabh Bachchan, but somehow he never gets that credit or the respect of that superstardom. Why do you think that is? Is it again the same superstar persona?
It's more or less of the same thing, like some people can be superstars, some can be actors. Unfortunately, that's always been the case in Bollywood, where the distinction between the two is very obvious. And Nasiruddin Shah very early on came to be associated with parallel cinema as well as sort of semi-commercial cinema for the longest time. He was never the hero. He probably never, Amol Palekar in the 70s, he never really had that, or in the 80s, he never really had that. I don't think he had that ambition also to be Amitabh Bachchan sort of character. And he did whatever, and he's right about the fact that he's a better actor. And there are, I can name at least 15 better actors than Amitabh Bachchan, but that's not the point, right? Like, I can name 10 better actors than Shah Rukh Khan also. It's just that about being a superstar in Hindi cinema in India is very different from being an artist or being an actor. And, he is by far one of the best Indian actors, not just Hindi film actors, that we've had, Nasiruddin Shah. And he continues to be that even in his late career stages. Even the shows he does, like Taj, he's playing, I think, Akbar in that. And even there, you feel like, oh shit, don't waste your time doing these big long web shows and spending so much time when you can do some two good films maybe with good directors. But he still puts so much into the shows, and it still comes out very naturally. He's not like phoning it in, and you can tell that. And he's appeared in so many short films in the last 8 to 9 years, a lot of young directors. One of them was Interior Cafe Night, like 5 or 6 years ago. He appears with Shehnaz Patel, and there's Sweta Basu Prasad also in that, and Naveen Kasturia. And I think the fact that he's supporting young voices and constantly appearing in short films and sort of very curious about their vision, I find fascinating. And that shows why he's one of the best actors. I can understand his bitterness as well. It's the bitterness that people like Anurag Kashyap also harnessed and became the kind of filmmakers they were. It's something that a lot of actors and character actors have been sort of nurturing for years and decades. But I'd also say that if Nasiruddin Shah was as famous or if he was a superstar in an alternate universe like Amitabh Bachchan, I don't think he would have been as happy or as satisfied with his work as he is right now. I'm nobody to say how satisfied he is, but I think we wouldn't have gotten the Nasiruddin Shah that we have in the last 30 or 40 years that we did if he had started doing the Amitabh Bachchan kind of roles or aspiring. We would have lost him. And I think I think it's good for us that he's continued to do. Like, it's not like he's not done masala films. He was terrific in Mora. A lot of us saw him for the first time in the 90s films, in Chamatkar and Mora, and so many of the films he did in a lot of B movies also, Trimurti. So it just, and it always feels like when he's doing these mainstream films, it always feels like he's better than the film, and he uses that, like something like Akshay Khanna does, you know, when he plays cop characters, he's always smarter than the people around him, and it shows on his face. And the, it was always the same with Nasiruddin Shah, and it's very enjoyable to see that. Like, I really very much enjoyed, one of my first memories of him, watching him, was in one of my favorite films, Masoom, and it broke my heart. I've never had the courage to watch it more than twice or thrice. And to do those kind of roles, you can't be an Amitabh Bachchan. You know, you can't be those people. So I think he's right about it, and his bitterness has served us well.
You know, he's such a wide filmography. I was looking at it, like, where do I ask about, you know, his performances? Like,
yeah, I know.
So long. So any memorable performances, Masoom you mentioned, any other performances that, you know, like, that are just very memorable for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's true, because he goes back so long, and even I had to go through this wiki page before getting onto the podcast with you, because it's been years and years, and you can actually take out the films little by little, you know, like, he's done so many. Like, of course, Jaane Bhi Do Yaaro is one of those films that so many people remember the 80s, one of the last of the satires in a sense. I've loved him in probably almost every role he's done, even in the bad films. Like, Masoom is personally one of my favorite roles of Nasiruddin Shah. Just as, you know, a lot of... He did so many terrific films in the 80s, which is notoriously known as the lesser decade in Hindi cinema. I think Nasiruddin Shah and Govind Nilani and all the parallel filmmakers and actors and a lot of these films and artists, the FTI people came up during this era. And I think, you know, I'm very glad that he did that. But a lot of my sort of, a lot of my experience of Nasiruddin Shah started in the 90s. You know, I saw these films like Aaj Satya and all much later. You know, I did not know that he was in those films till like the late 90s or so. So for me, a lot of his roles were in the 90s, but I'd say he's aged better than a lot of the actors, you know. Even his role in a film like The Wednesday, which has not probably aged well politically or anything, but, you know, even to play that role is very difficult, because the entire role is just the camera on you and talk, and him basically expressing the very problematic rage of a common man. And I think he was a scene stealer in that film, in something like that. I loved him in the small roles in Kabiya Kabina, in Chamatkar. You know, his Marco was really one of my favorite characters because of the cricket match and because of his sort of chemistry with Shah Rukh Khan in that. I loved him in Monsoon Wedding as well, as this very conflicted patriarch of the Delhi family. Not enough credit is given to him, you know, for that film. As you said, you know, we'll never tire of really listing down his best performances. But one of my recent ones was Gheraiya, even though he was barely there in that film. I think as far as old fathers go, and as far as the characters that he's come to be known for go, I think that's one of his better performances.
Which one do you like more, Ishqiya or Dard Ishqiya?
Good question. I actually like him in both of them equally. I think he's terrific in Ishqiya because it was more novelty factor then. And I think he's brilliant in some of the scenes. I love the fact that one of the most romantic songs of our era has been shot on him and his dreams of sort of romancing a Vidya Balan character. I think he was the best part of both those films. And I always used to constantly suppress a chuckle when he used to come onto screen. Because he used to play this retro Bollywood character, but also a very real sort of crook character at the same time. And I think I enjoyed him more in Ishqiya because it was new to us then. It was a little different. It was not something we associate with a Nasiruddin Shah performance.
And in terms of film as well, was Ishqiya the better one?
I think Ishqiya was the better film. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, all right, and then I let's move to another topic, Mani Ratnam and some of his Hindi films. So, you know, Dil Se completed 25 years recently,
yeah.
And there was some usual chatter. I know you've done a few years ago a revisit. Does it hold up today? Because a lot of people whom I speak to didn't like the film earlier, and some of the newer audiences they watch, they don't like Shah Rukh Khan's character becoming a little bit of a sort of like a creep, to say it mildly. So how do you see that film?
Yeah, I think that was the most interesting part. We did a FC retake video recently for 25 years of Dilse. And that's something we ended up talking about, because, you know, you can't look at, one thing is you can't look at it through the lens of, you know, the current sort of era and the current sort of wokeness that is prevalent. It's fine to do it, you know, it's fine to call out like problematic films of stalking and all these themes in the 90s. But with a film like Dilse, you have to understand that I think Maniratnam may have deliberately also meant the Shah Rukh Khan character to be that way. Because of course, they were metaphors, and a lot has been written about this on the internet as well. You know, on Twitter, there have been threads. We talked about it in the video. I think we weren't supposed to like the Shah Rukh Khan character. And he was, because he had done films like Dar and Bazigar and Anjaam, and I feel like Maniratnam harnessed that creepiness into his Dilse character, because he's supposed to represent the center in this film. And Manish Agarwal is supposed to represent the Northeast, and the politics and the tension between the two was sort of reflected in the tension between these two characters. And whether Maniratnam meant to do that or not, I think it comes across in a subconscious way as well. And if it was supposed to be a likable character, he wouldn't have met with the kind of ending he did, right? They would have been a happy couple, and they would have survived, and he would have taken her out of terrorism. But that never happens. It's a very, very ballsy film, a very gutsy film to make. And only Maniratnam, coming from the South with those kind of sensibilities, with no compromise, like the fact that he made Roja before that and Bombay before that, the fact that he could make Dilse, completing that trilogy, only he could have made it. And only he could have used Shah Rukh Khan in that way, in a way that makes us think he's creepy, but also wants to make us like him because he's a romantic hero, you know. And I think that reading of him sort of deliberately needing being creepy, I think that's spot on. And I think if you look at that film through that lens now, it'll make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I find that film so beautiful. Like, just forget the characters. I think every song of it has been so beautifully shot. You can just watch that film even on mute, because even the frames are just so beautifully, like, they hold up even today. Like, the colors, the costumes, somehow it's very beautiful done. Now, is it the best Rahman music?
Not for me. Like, I have my favorite Rahman soundtracks, and pretty much a lot of his done is. But, you know, it's hard to tell. Like, I feel like it's the best. It uses music in a better way than a lot of the films from that era. Because music, if you look at it, doesn't technically belong in this film. But the way the music videos are shot, and the way it's sort of an extension of that landscape, and the politics and the themes. And as you said, you know, the way it's beautifully shot, I think it's... that's why it's sort of Rahman's music and the visuals sort of elevate each other in a very unique way. But I think Rahman's music in, as far as Hindi films are concerned, in the 90s, I felt like his music in Rangila and Roja and Bombay, for that matter, for me personally, they were better, especially Bombay. You know, very haunting music, and it's something that I still remember over the film. That's not to say it's sort of totally swallows the effect of the film, but it goes so perfectly. And I can't divorce the sight of Manisha Koirala from Rahman's music through the 90s. And that's a very distinct thing, because Manisha Koirala also was a not your typical A-lister Bollywood heroine. She was a very underrated sort of actress, in a sense that she hasn't been given enough credit for the kind of role she did through the late 80s and the 90s. She was the antidote to the more mainstream heroines like Madhuri and the ones that came up in the 90s. And she was technically not a heroine per se. You know, she was always sort of a woman of her own accord in a lot of these films. And I feel like Rahman's music complemented her persona very well in these films. And she wasn't afraid to play women and characters that we weren't really we weren't really attuned to seeing in Hindi cinema.
Right. What's your best song otherwise, Sindhil said?
I think Satrangi Re would come close to that because it sort of grew on me over time, and recently when I rewatched it to do the video, I feel like it made more sense in terms of the film, and I sort of found myself really getting carried away with the way the song is shot and with the way it sort of merges into the film. So that stays with me. Of course, Chaiya Chaiya is a popular song, and there are better songs in the film. Even the title track, for example, the way it's shot, almost like aesthetically, the violence is shot, and it could have gone wrong very easily. But I think Satrangi Re sort of really grew on me over time.
How was Yuva as a film for you?
Yuva was another very clutter-breaking film. Again, you know, I'd say when you remember when you see a Maniratnam Hindi film, because being like Bollywood enthusiasts, being fans of Hindi cinema who've grown up on a certain kind, you're not used to seeing that kind of vision, that kind of sort of storytelling on screen. And I love the fact that he was always loyal to his roots in a sense, and to his very and to his vision in a sense, because he sort of transcended languages after a while. And you would look forward to a Maniratnam film, whether you're, you know, in Bombay or you're in Chennai or you're in Delhi. And it was very distinct. And for me, Yuva also was a very difficult, first of all, very difficult film and story to tell. Lovely music, lovely soundtrack. I remember my college years, I think first or second year was entirely Yuva's music. Because even I was in college then, and for me, it was, and I was new to Bombay. And I used to keep listening to it on my like Discman and my Walkman. And I used to always go to college and get a little psyched up for a new college, new people. And there are always soundtracks like that that define your years. And I think Yuva soundtrack was one of them. And I have so many like favorite tracks in that. And I think for me, even Vivek Oberoi was a new sort of deal then. And he was supposed to tout it to be this next superstar, and Abhishek Bachchan was known to be acting only well in Maniratnam films, and I thought we saw a lot of that come alive in Yuva better than a lot of the other Maniratnam films with, say, Abhishek Bachchan or with anyone else. And I think it was a very memorable film for me. I can't say if it's aged well or not. I haven't seen him for more than 10 years, but I definitely thought that for me it was one of my personally, my more important Maniratnam Hindi films.
Right. We spoke about Bombay in the last podcast about Bombay films. What's the best Hindi film of Maniratnam? Rav. He's done not a lot many. So I have Ravan, Roja, Bombay, Guru, Dilse, Yuva. Sathya, it's not really him, but
it's not
his story.
What
do you call like some of his best Hindi films? Two of his.
I think his best Hindi film for me still remain, I think, Bombay and Roja. You know, probably his first two, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know if it's the time I watched it in, or how young I was, or how Rehman's music sort of gelled into that film, and or the kind of story he was telling. For me, it sort of merges with 1942 Love Story. It's sort of an extension of that universe, and I very much loved, I was very much haunted and disturbed by Bombay and Roja, and for me they all sort of merge into one film. Because then of course Dilse came, you had Shah Rukh Khan, then Yuva came, you had more stars in these films and all, but those for me were you know, the kind of filmmaking that I always knew I wanted to see without really realizing it, especially as a child, especially as someone who would go on to, you know, write about film or get very involved in Hindi cinema. I thought those films made me mature faster than a lot of other films in the 90s. And as I said, you know, it's part of that trilogy with 1942, not with Dilse so much. And I remember coming out, you can actually point out, you know, actually distinguish the time that you may have grown up a little while watching certain films. And I think for me, those two were, and of course, I'm very grateful that my parents even took me to watch this film, because I don't think a lot of kids in Ahmedabad back then watched it. But we used to go to the drive-in quite a lot to watch almost every Friday films. And I'm very thankful that I was able to see it at that stage in my life. Who knows, if I'd watched it later, I would have again looked at it through the lens of my teens or my adulthood and not enjoyed it, or not enjoyed it, but not sort of really appreciated it as much.
And how was Guru?
Guru, I have mixed feelings about. Like, I don't think it was as good a Abhishek Bachchan performance as a lot of people mentioned. I still think he was better in Yuva, and to an extent, Ravan in that matter. But I remember enjoying watching Guru while I watched it, but it was fairly forgettable in terms of it being a biopic or it being a Maniratna biopic also. You expect sort of more, and, you know, of course, very popular story, and you wanted to like that film a lot more than you did, but I don't see, like, it was probably his most mainstream Hindi film, I'd say. And in that sense, it's not a bad thing, but I also felt like there were a lot of limitations in terms of who he'd cast and the kind of characters he used on the side, you know, whether it was sort of, I think, the Vidya Balan character or, and, you know, it was, for me, I don't think it was his best Hindi work, but I can see why he made that film also.
Which brings us to the next topic, which you alluded to. So, what's Abhishek Bachchan's best performance?
See, the thing is, his ambition in Maniratnam films have to be lauded more than his performances, you know, because we know he's a very limited actor, and we know a lot of critics also treat him with kid gloves when they write about him, because you just generally get a sense that he's a very nice guy and you don't want to really run him down too much. Like, when you watch him act, you know that he's doing something that's a lot of the time is beyond his ability, but he's still giving it his best shot. And in the beginning, I remember this used to happen quite a bit, but I was truly only impressed by his performance in Yuva. I think that's his probably his best, because I felt Maniratnam figured out that he should not speak much to be taken seriously as an actor, because he has that, having grown up in the Bachchan household, he has that certain kind of glare and aura around him that if you strip away the way he speaks and you can't take away that Hindi twang, that very urban Hindi twang, if you take away that and make him into a more sort of earthy, almost like violent character, I think Maniratnam used him very well in Yuva. And I think till now, that's probably his best performance. I still think he can be directed well if the directors know how to use him and don't trip over the fact that they have Abhishek Bachchan, because he had such meaty roles in Breathe, you know, in part one, in part two, and he was playing a double role in them, and I don't think he did justice to any of that. I think he was comically bad in some of those. And he's still making some very interesting choices. He did Bob Biswas also, but again, you know, he never measured up to those characters. He never really, as much as I appreciated the fact that he chose those films and chose those roles way beyond his means, I don't think he's ever really managed to really hit home. And I don't think we've seen a better performance than Yuva, even after all this. Even though Guru was like tailor-made for him, it was sort of the lead role and all. I think he sort of faltered in a lot of those monologues towards the end.
Was that the reason, like, he was better in Sarkar, because he was more quiet?
I think so. That's a good point also, because I don't think he spoke a lot. A camera focused on his face a lot, I remember. But you need to use him in a certain way to get the best out of him. And I think, yeah, Sarkar is something, again, you know, you'd expect Ram Gopal Verma to realize that early on, at least. And Maniratnam got that. But you haven't seen a lot of that in the last few years, when he's technically in his second innings and he's doing the kind of roles that he's getting not really criticized for, but he's also getting appreciated for trying them. But nobody, if you notice, nobody is really praising his performance per se. So, I still think he's a very limited actor. But as long as he keeps sort of wanting to be a better actor and keeping the ambition high, maybe he'll find a director that uses him like, you know, Mani Ratnam did back then.
How was, like, I think Manmarzia was, I think, his last performance, which was worth liking. Otherwise, he's been, like, a little bit, as you rightly mentioned, not very memorable, especially Bob Biswas and even that Scam film, very forgettable performance. Even Dasvi, for that matter. So how was Manmarzia?
Manmarzia, again, you know, very well-cast film. I was quite surprised to see the casting. I thought Anurag Kashyap used him well in that film. Because Abhishek Bachchan was technically playing Abhishek Bachchan in that film. Or he was also playing a version of his Kabhi Alvida Na Kehna character in that film, right? Yeah. Like, he was the good guy, the husband, who then finds it very difficult to be the good guy and control his rage, you know. Because he has a wife who's confused, he has a partner who's not totally devoted to him. And, you know, not a big fan of how Manmarzia ended, but I thought Abhishek was perfectly adequate for that role. Again, you know, you need to cast people like him well. And the fact that it played into our perception of Abhishek Bachchan person and a character was nicely done.
How was Bluffmaster as a film?
Bluffmaster as a film was fairly derivative. Like, sure, it is enjoyable, and you know, you could sense Rohan Sippy having a ball making that film. And we don't do a lot of these films very well. It's a lot of it is derived from, you know, their Hollywood counterparts. I thought Abhishek Bachchan still was enjoying himself in that film, just as he was enjoying himself in Banti or Babli. I felt like he sort of bought into that role and decided to sort of carry swag, or so to say, his sort of the way his upbringing, his sort of urban swag in a certain way, and there as a con artist, obviously. I thought it was interesting. I'm still not a big fan of the film. I know it has its fans, but I wouldn't really begrudge Abhishek Bachchan for that role. He was pretty cool in that role, but the thing is, he also knew he was cool in that role. And, you know, you don't want that in a lot of characters that are supposed to be con artists or are supposed to be one step ahead of the audience. So it was fairly middling for me.
Is there any earlier performance you like? I think, or the film, pre-Banti or Babli. So he's done like Refugee, Kuch Na Kaho. Dhai Akshar Prem, any memorable thing?
I had great hopes, especially after Refugee and Tera Jadoo Chal Gaya, I remember, was his second film or third film. I had great hopes from him because he was supposed to be the next big thing. But then when I saw him with Hrithik Roshan in Main Prem Ki Diwani, I realized that I don't think this guy can act very well. I don't think there were any memorable performances pre Banti or Babli or pre Kabhi Alvida Na Kehna, for that matter. 2005-06 is about around the time he started to come into his own, or he started to find better directors, basically.
Yeah. How is Kabhi Alvida Na Kehna?
I think it's a fairly risky film for its time. It's the first time I saw genuine true ambition in Karan Johar as a storyteller, and getting out of his comfort zone, telling stories that won't necessarily be accepted by his fans and mainstream Hindi cinema back for the time, for its time. And to have Shah Rukh Khan and play that role, you know, and Rani Mukherjee play that role, not easy to do. Of course, he had to put the songs, and of course, he had to do that packaging that he normally does, which I found quite interesting, because you tend to expect a certain kind of film and then it turns out to be something else altogether. I think it was one of Karan Johar's more mature films in that sense. Whether he pulled it off or not, you know, everyone has their own opinion on it. I haven't seen it for a long time, so I can't really say. But fairly mature film for its time, yeah.
And sort of my last question for today. Delhi 6 or Rang De Basanti, the better film?
Rang De Basanti. Delhi 6, I'd still maintain that the last 10 or 15 minutes let down that film. Even though it was going very well for the first half, I very much enjoyed that film. But not a lot of, apart from Rehman's music and, you know, the way the film was shot, not a lot of recall value in terms of the storytelling itself and the sort of political undertones, the satire itself. And again, you know, Abhishek Bachchan, I always have a sense that whenever you see Abhishek Bachchan do a good role, you always feel like, oh shit, if a better actor were there, he would have killed it. You know, like he does the kind of roles that a lot of actors would kill for. He chooses them accordingly, or he gets offered them accordingly, but he never really makes the most of them. I thought Delhi 6 also was an example of that. You know, he played it very straight, too straight. And when he plays it twisted also in a straight way, which is very weird to see, like in Breathe or Bob Biswas and all. So yeah, I'd still say Rang De Basanti, because it was a very, you have to understand the sort of environment in which Rang De Basanti came out and how such a film would never get made today. And you know, the anger of the youth and towards the system, towards the to make a film like that, and it was a big deal. I was in college, just I'd finished college then, and I remember all my friends going crazy about it, getting inspired by it, and thankfully not in an entirely wrong way. But yeah, you know, you need to see provocative films like that when you're younger to know that, you know, anti-establishment emotions are not a bad thing, and sometimes sure you can get consumed by them, like the youngsters in this film did, but it can be a very powerful watch. And I don't think Rakesh Mehra has made a better film than that. And I don't think he will also. For me, yeah, that was definitely one of my more memorable films in terms of its impact, in terms of its cultural impact, its moment in Bombay, in Hindi cinema, in amongst the generation that was starting to watch films like his and Anurag Kashyap's. I think Black Friday came around the same time also. So we are getting exposed to a different kind of mainstream cinema. So for me, it'll always be Rang De Basanti.
Right. I remember, I think Rang De Basanti was that one film that actually led to that change in when the Jessica Lal murder case came in and that Manu Sharma, it was all like exactly the same time when The Judgment came out, and it was like people were recreating the scandal scenes, recreating that scene from the film itself. So that was the first time I also felt, you know, like cinema has that personal power to bring about that change. Although I still, like, as a film, I don't want to watch it again, because, you know, you tend to disagree with some things right now.
Yeah,
like you said, you know, there are certain fond memories of with that film. Okay. All right. I think we spoke about three topics today. So I covered almost all the questions I wanted to. So hopefully listeners enjoyed it. And we'll be back in a few weeks. And I think I look forward to your top five films. So I will wait for it when it comes out.
Yeah, no pressure. Yeah, thanks.
Okay. All right. Thanks again. We look forward to hearing from you in a few weeks from now. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.